Hello, people. Welcome to another version of Simon Says. It's great to have you still on board. And I have two great guests today. And I just want to get straight into introducing them. The man who's started as a youngster. I want to ask you about this. Started as a youngster, I think, with the award of Mr. Ocean Grove as a youngster. But then went to be the wonderful lead frontman of Uncanny X-Men. He's been in We Will Rock You. Absolutely 80s. He's done Neighbours. He's been in Chopper. He's a singer, songwriter, actor, stage, TV and screen. He's an author. He's just a magnificent man. Would you welcome Brian Mennix? How are you, sir?
Oh, he's an idiot. I'm good, thanks, Simon. Very good, thank you.
Great, mate. Good to see you. And to accompany him, well, I'd say this bloke, if what this bloke doesn't know about radio has not been spoken, written, or read about. Author, radio presenter, voiceover artist, columnist, novelist. I said author, businessman, guest speaker, MC. He's been in the, I think he started, I'm going to ask about this too, in 1973 in Longreach.
Ooh.
The great Kevin Hillier. Welcome to you two.
Hello, Simon. Lovely to be with you. And isn't that restraining order kicking in yet, Mennix? And why am I still hanging around with you? Look, you're even behind me. Good God.
I'm sneaking up on you.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here.
Now, I'm very pleased, Kevin, to be actually interviewing you, because I've had a lot of interviews with you on the other end, so this is a good one. Yep. I can probe a little bit deeply.
Oh, hello.
And with Brian, mate, well, there's just how much do you want to talk about when, where, and how it was. So let's start. Look, I want to start with you, Kevin.
Is it
true? 1973 in Longreach.
Yep.
You're not originally a Victorian boy. You're a Queenslander?
No, I'm a Victorian boy. I'm a Laverton boy, born in the Footscray Hospital. Dad was in the Air Force at Laverton, so that's why we finished up in Queensland. He got a posting to Amberley, and we went to Queensland, and that's why I started up there. So went to high school in Queensland and then did a radio school, and then at 16 years of age, got a big offer from the rock and roll radio station. I thought I was going to be working in Brisbane. They said Longreach, and I went, where's that?
Yes.
So 1,000 miles northwest of Brisbane is where I started as a 16-year-old kid.
Fantastic. But that's a great start to put you right up, right in amongst it at a young age.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I did it. You did everything. You did on-air stuff. You did off-air stuff. You did sales. You wrote the ads. You produced the ads. You did every single thing you could. You're on air 7 days a week, and it was good fun. Had to play a lot of really daggy country music, but apart from that, it was all right.
Well, just on the music to Brian, well, mate, you've just been a musical icon for people in Melbourne and Australia. But when did it all start for you? Like, Uncanny X-Men were huge, and I remember that. But when did you decide that you were going to be a person who's going to jump around on a rock stage and play the guitar and record stuff? When it really hit home that you were going to do that?
Well, originally I wanted to be a film director. And so from about 12 on, I just made Super 8 films and made lots of films. And then when I finished HSC at St. Bernard's...
And you passed, mate?
I did pass, I did.
So a lot of rock and rollers didn't do that, mate.
A lot of them didn't, but I did. And I didn't get into Swinburne Film and Television School, but I'd been in a band since I was about 10. And while I was working in it, so I was going to fill in a year at Johnson's Tap Factory and then reapply again. But during the year, I hated Johnson's Tap Factory so much that the band started rehearsing, said, come on, let's rehearse and get this band good. And I thought, well, maybe the band is the way out of the Tap Factory.
Yes.
And so by the time the end of that year happened, the band was going well enough for me to think, well, don't worry about Swinburne Film and Television School. And I ended up getting to make film clips and stuff anyway later, so it worked out well. So my brother wanted to be more the musician than I did, and I wanted to be a film director, but through circumstances, I became went down the music road.
Oh, fantastic, right? And well, like we'll come back to that. So there's a whole lot of things I want to try and bring into this if I can from both of you. Now, Kevin, we talked about up in Longreach. What was the next step? How do you get into the big time?
12 months in Longreach.
I mean, Longreach is a big time, but it's a bigger time.
I spent a year there, then went to Toowoomba for 5 months and worked there, and then went to Brisbane. So I started late 1974. I got into Brisbane and then sort of did Midnight to Dawn for a little while, and then I think I was 18. I was doing Breakfast, which was ridiculous. And then went on to Knights, had a really, really good little run of success on Knights, won a couple of awards and things. And then at the end of the 1981, I came to Melbourne to 3XY. So I had nine years in Brisbane before I came to Melbourne, which was really good.
Yeah, so lots of experience because you got on the great 3XY, mate. Now,
it's good.
Brian, you must remember times of 3XY. You would have had your songs on there, and you would have been a guest behind the microphone at times too.
Yeah. 3XY was very good to us. And one of the things I most remember about 3XY was that we used to record. We'd advertise on 3XY every week, so we'd go into 3XY and we'd see Gary. Remember the Gary, the guy that used to work doing the
Gary Cranston.
Yeah, and we'd go in there and we get pretty shit faced.
we can bleep that out later. Yeah.
I don't know that you could do the sort of things at the radio station today that you could do then, but we'd be drinking and we'd be having a bit of this and a bit of that. And we made some of the most creative ads ever, like where me and Ronnie were being our dads or anything. And so, yeah, I've had a lot of great times at 3XY. It was very good to be.
That's fantastic, mate. So, when did you decide to be an author? Because I remember writing a foreword for one of your books.
Well, do you want me to get it and I'll read a bit of your
foreword? Oh.
If you know, it's not far away.
Yeah. Here we go.
So, you're an author too. You've written some books as well.
Did a couple of books. Did a like father, like son book about all the footy fathers and son combination. And I did Rodney Eade's biography.
Yeah, that's right. Now, what was that one again? That was...
Rocket Science.
Rocket Science, that's right. Yeah, the biography of Rodney Eade, that's fantastic. Now, yeah. Brian, you've gone for it. Now, just
here we go.
Again, the Broadie Skulls, I remember that.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
So Simon wrote the foreword for me. Now, I'll skip through all Simon's talking about himself. You know, I've been involved...
Oh, is there other stuff in it as well?
What? Did I write something?
I've been part of its soul. And then he says... One book truly captures all of this, the emotion, the heartache, the exaltation, the furor, the excitement, the true essence of our great game. This is not that book. A few special people have an insightful vision into the people's game, both past, present and future. Brian Mannix is not one of those people.
Oh, I'm glad you've got that. Well, that's good. Well, but to be fair, you wanted something like that. You said the book's not a serious book, it's a funny book, and you needed something to go with it. But I took great pleasure in writing that. I thought this is gonna go hard. If he says I'm going hard, I'm going hard.
Yeah, we're gonna have that.
Now is that still hold that up again, mate? Is that still for sale? Don't worry.
It's a good looking
not
book.
Really. It's pretty much a collector's item these days. I must probably put it on so you can get it on Tinder and that sort of
Somebody might, left or right might come with that book under their arm, mate. I'm not sure. That's good.
Well, it's a good one.
Was that considered a weapon in Broadmeadows, that book? Because it's big enough to hit someone with.
It was considered the Bible.
Of course it was.
It's the go-to book.
And it's a big book because it's written by hand in big letters. Right?
And every page coloured in. Actually, Brian's got a new book. He's done an audio book.
Yeah, I've got an audio book.
What's the audio book?
It's called Hell, I Didn't Even Like Al Green, which is about my adventures in America. And obviously I met a bloke who said, Hell, I didn't even like Al Green. But he got the job playing for Al Green. And I've also got this book too.
Yeah.
My biography, which is...
Hang on, Brian Mannix.
50 years.
Brian Mannix by Brian Mannix. I have a look at everything. You've got one showed up. Hell, I didn't even like Al Green.
On you, Kev.
There's Al Green, so I've got that one.
We will promote any book you've got.
Fantastic.
Now, so for our radio people, mate. So, Kevin, what are you doing now? Because like you do, your voice. As I said, I've got a face for radio and a voice for writing. And I can't write. So you've just been in a whole lot of things. But what are you doing now?
Well, I'm sort of not. I'm doing podcasting mostly. Someone says, I've just signed a deal with someone, but I can't tell you anything. I've just signed a deal with someone. It's a hairdressing people. No, I actually have. I've just agreed to terms for a new show that I'll be doing next year, which is
fantastic.
I'm actually really excited about.
And we don't give it away, but can we ask what station or what time?
It will be. It's a Saturday afternoon sports show. So I'm going to be doing that next year, which will be really good. And I'm still hopeful that we'll get the late show back up and running on RSN 927 sometime next year, once all the COVID stuff is all finished and you're allowed to go back into buildings and all that sort of stuff.
Well, just
Brian was on that show. He used to come in on a Wednesday night at midnight and we'd wax lyrical about what had gone on during the week.
Yeah. And I was the best tipper that station had. I just picked names that I liked, and sometimes I was picking six winners in the night. It was fantastic.
Hong Kong and I think it was Turf on Tade in South Africa. Yeah. Brian was almost unbackable favourite to come up with a winner.
Thanks very much for the tips too. That was Well, that was going to ask you, how did you go through the COVID era? Because for me, the best way to explain it to people is it was always Wednesday. Because there's no Monday start of the week. There was no Friday end of the week. There was nothing happening if you go to on weekend. So it was just sort of like being Wednesday every week.
Yeah.
Right? And Wednesday every day. So Brian is a muso, and like you've been on stage, you've been on telly, etc. Mainly as a muso, how did you go?
Oh, terrible. I've done two gigs since April. I was an acoustic guitar, but I got so used to doing nothing. You know, I'd walk, for maybe 10K a day or whatever, but I got so used to doing nothing that it got to the point you become useless. And so like, you got two things to do today. I've got to ring somebody and I have to pay a bill, and I'm getting anxiety about that.
Yes.
So when I had to go back and work, oh God, I was shaking. It was just terrifying.
That's interesting, mate, because I know people who said, I had a meeting with a person and they said, look, I nearly didn't come to the meeting because I'm having anxiety about going out. I've got so used to being in, I've almost forgotten what the outside world was. And for some people, even though it might not have been comfortable in some ways, it actually got very comfortable for them because I could just be here and I can do my own little thing and I can decide when I ring that person and I decide when I pay that bill for the whole day, and it was very interesting to see how people went along with it. And you, Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, obviously I lost the 927 gig and a lot of there was no MC work, there was the voiceover work all dried up. So it was a pretty tough sort of 6 or 7 month period, but we're coming out the back end of it now. But see, radio, that's a good thing about radio. Radio's done in a darkened room on your own with just a microphone, so you don't need anybody else. It's like,
One of the few things except that we're doing a darkened room by yourself.
Exactly right. And to the point where some radio stations actually hit in the darkened room, they had a mirror there. So it was you and a mirror. So you're talking to yourself, you're going, I'm having a great time here.
I can have a great time with me in a mirror. How's your band going, Simon?
Oh, look, mate, I'll put in a plug for that. Better late than never. We're a cover band. And as Kevin might know, so I went to school with Brian's brother, Chris. So we've actually done a few gigs together. He's been in our band. We've done two together with his band. So, but better late than never. I'll just put a plug in for that. Has played one gig in about 9 months, and I couldn't make it.
Too much anxiety to go to the gigs.
Too much anxiety. So I can do this in my office by myself. I can do this in front of people. Hang on, I haven't even been doing it in front of a mirror. I can't even remember my moves. But yes, I know we're looking forward to getting. Like we're just a covers band, but we love it, and we love seeing people up on the dance floor and people singing along. So. We're Better Late Than Ever is aptly named because we're all a bit late. And being late is better than never. So that's good, mate. We'll be having a bit of fun with that as we go into the 70s, 80s, 90s rock and roll. If you don't know the song and can't move your feet, we don't play it. Simple as that. So you pick one everybody knows and we'll do that one, so that's all right.
Your musical prowess came off on our podcast recently, Simon, because we had the lovely Marcy Howard on.
Oh, the beautiful Marcy Howard. Yes.
And she talked about your extremely, exceptionally good vocal prowess doing backing vocals for Goanna.
The record would have been shit without you, they said.
Thanks, mate.
Never have been a hit.
Well, look, I think I might have said this on one of the other podcasts, but it was a great moment. So Justin and I went in to watch them record their Spirit of Place album, their biggest album.
Yep.
And we just went in to watch. And they did, there's a song on it called Factory Man. And it's about Shane and Marcy's dad. Leo, the great man, the great Richmond supporter, passed away a number of years ago, but a great man. And it was about, because he used to work in the Nestle or Nestle's factory back then in Warrnambool. And it was about him. And the producer said, oh, we need some male voices in the background. And Shane turned around and points to us and said, they can sing. And he goes, you know, the producer goes, what? These two footballers? So we sang in the background, and it's called, you won't see it in the digital version, but on the vinyl, there's an insert. And Shane thanks everybody. And he's got, we'd like to thank Simon and Justin Madden, people we could look up to, boom, boom. And for singing in the Gentleman's Canteen Chorus on Factory Man. That's what he calls it. It was the whole band and the producer and us all with the cans, you know, doing song. And I might have a little bit of, but, Brian and I actually recorded a song together, and we took you know, it was a footy song. And we took it to the footy stations and said, do you want this? And they said, yeah, but we're not paying you. Yeah. We'll just take it off you. And we said, well, I don't think we'll do that.
That's typical. See the big men fly.
Yeah, see the big men fly. That's right. Hear the crowd roar. Footy's on again, bigger than before. That's right. Bigger, brighter, better than before.
It was a good song. It was really good.
No, mate, we might, hang on. Tell them you're busy. Go on.
I'm busy.
Yeah, it's Paul McCartney.
Also, mate, if they ring and I don't answer, I don't leave a message, they're not important, and I'm not important to them. You know, that's the old story. So now I just want to go back over some of this stuff because I've got lots of information. That's the other thing I wanted to ask Kevin is, I love this one, media manager for the Werribee Footy Club.
Yep,
you're still a footy nut, and you are a life member of the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah. No, I'm really proud of the life membership.
That's fantastic. And how many games did you play for the Western Bulldogs to get life membership?
The same as you did.
That's true. Yeah, I played the Western Bulldogs.
You and I played the same amount of games for the Bulldogs.
That's right.
No, see, that was the only bugger about going to Queensland when we went to Queensland is when I went up there and I wanted to play footy, there was no Aussie rules footy in Brisbane to play. I couldn't play. I finished up playing soccer because I couldn't play. I played rugby league for a while, but I played soccer because I couldn't play Aussie rules, because in the end, my brother, who's 5 years younger than me, my dad finished up coaching him because dad played some footy at Yarraville and stuff like that.
Right.
So dad finished up coaching a team because there was no one who played the game up there back in the sort of 70s and 80s. It just didn't exist. So
it actually started to get better up there, I think, in the 80s, because I remember being up there in the 80s and they actually had the Queensland Footy League, QV.
Quaffle.
Back then, or what it was, on TV at one stage. And there were some older VFL, AFL players playing. So they actually were showing that on the TV. But it took a while to get going, right?
Yeah, it did. So I missed out on that.
And I was going to say, with Werribee, mate, there wouldn't have been much media to work for the Werribee Footy Club this year.
Well, there was a little bit because we had a bloke called Mark Williams as our coach, and Choco loves the media. So he's now obviously left the club in the last week or so and gone to Melbourne in a development role. But no, we had a bit to do with, we had no games to talk about. We had nothing. No, it was a very quiet period.
Quiet time, yeah. And, but out of the three of us here, somebody's actually played football this year. Now, Brian, you've actually played in a game of footies this year. Is this right? You've got to tell us about this, because I didn't think I knew anybody actually played apart from, the ones we see on telly.
Well, for the first 6 months of the year, it was probably the biggest game of football that we had, biggest attended. I think there was about 300 or 400 people there, so that was a big attendance.
Now, where was it? Where was this?
It was up the bush somewhere. It might have been Shepparton, or I don't know. I can't really remember.
I hope you got there on time. I hope you remembered before the game.
Well, it was a good team. It had a blonde, fluffy forward line with Warwick Capper and me in the forward line.
Magnificent.
And Kuda was playing on my team, and so was Jake King. And Dustin Fletcher was playing against us, and a couple of other players. I can't remember who they were. And I had a great game, and 100% accuracy in front of goals. And
really? So how many goals did you kick?
One.
One out of one, that's 100%.
One kick, one goal, that was all I needed. It was fantastic, and the bloke playing on me and while he capped me, we went and had a beer at three-quarter time and then rushed back to the last quarter. But it was great. And, you know, I'm a bit like Cameron Smith now. Sort of weighing up whether to retire or whether to go on another season or not. I'm not sure yet.
Apparently, someone said to me, "Someone's whispering to me, don't give up your day job." Is that right? Yeah. No, mate, you'd make a great little rover, mate. You would have been.
No, I don't actually. I'm slow, and I have bad eye-hand coordination and small hands, so the ball just bounces out of them, and I can't kick, and I'm a bit soft. So.
But apart from that, it's all okay.
Apart from that, I'm exactly what Essendon needs.
Actually, you're exactly what Essendon's got.
Hang on. I'm going to hang up there. Now, and Kevin, but like you went to football as a kid, like as in playing yourself. Like, did you get into it?
I had the footy and the Ted Whitten number on the bin and on my back, and I loved Johnny Schultz and. Yeah. And I was a mad doggies man. And then, so to work for the club when I came back down to Melbourne in the early 80s was terrific. So I started there in about 84, just doing MC and stuff for him. And it went from there. So, and I'm still doing it. I would have been doing it this year.
Except yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's
hopefully do it next year as well. So yeah, so yeah, it's been terrific. I've really loved my work with the club. They've been great.
Now, just, I'm interested with both of you because I've been told I should write a book. Haha. And I haven't yet, but both you've written a book. How easy or how hard was it?
Go on, Brian.
Well, if you're writing about something you know very well, it's pretty easy. It's just, and I think if you write, the key is to write short sentences and short paragraphs. Don't ever write a long sentence. Like, I went there because it was Saturday, and due to that, I had to go there and fill the form in, and I did that, then I went home. That's a terrible sentence. I went there on Saturday. That's it. Then the other sentences to tell this. But no, I find it quite easy if once I've worked out what I'm going to, in my mind, then once I start, it's okay. What do you, Kev?
Yeah, look, I found the Rodney Eat book I did was easy to do because I sat down with Rodney and did a whole lot of interviews with him and then all the people around him. So the books I've done have always been interview-based books.
Yeah.
So that's been an easy thing for me. I wouldn't like to sit down and try and write my own story because, A, I can't remember half of it. I don't know how you remembered the stuff. Stop it, Brian. I don't know how Brian remembered half the stuff that's in his 50 years book. The detail is
unbelievable. That's right. Well, no, no. You know the old story. Anybody remembers the 60s wasn't really there. I think anybody in Brian's life who remembers wasn't really there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No. I mean, I've always found writing. I've written from day one of my radio career. So I've always kept that as a sort of little sidelight that I've had going on.
Yeah. I suppose that's the point, isn't it? If you're in radio and you've got to make content, you're going to be writing right from the start, isn't it? Yeah.
But you're not a fancy
writer. You're creating, aren't you?
Yeah. You'd write easily because it's about you. You'd be writing about you.
Well, no, this is one of the things. Somebody said, write a book. And I said, if I wrote a book about me and tell the truth, I'd lose all my friends. You know?
That's the other reason why I don't want to write a book about my story.
No, that's good. And Brian, like, I can remember going to see a play you wrote. I remember you actually...
The Bench or Countdown?
No. What was the first one again?
The first one was the football one, The Bench.
That's right, yeah. No, that's right. I remember that one. Yeah. I think you were going to try and get me in there, but you had crackers instead. I said that was better. I think that was I know I'm ugly, but he fitted the ugly football a bit.
Yeah, except the trouble with crackers was he came on, he's got, you know, probably 2 minutes worth of dialogue, which is as the coach's rant, and then he just turned it into about 13 minutes worth of dialogue, which would upset the flow of the play a little bit. But anyway, you know, you do what you do.
I think I can remember you asking me, and I think I had a nightmare that night about I'll never remember my line. So, like, which would be true too. So, I don't think I ever got, you know, I think I'm glad I got the stage where I didn't have to do it. That was good. That's excellent. So now what's in the future? So, I think, you know, this is being done towards the end of 2020. We have lots of Australia are really happy. Victoria looks like it's going to be happy. How do you see the future for you? Well, I'll start with you, Kevin, first. You've talked about you're probably going to have some more radio. How's the rest of it going to go?
Yeah, oh, look, the podcasting area has been really good. The Life of Brian podcast that we do is going really well. So we've been having a ball doing that. Alice Cooper, Shaken Stevens, Ross Wilson, we've talked to some great people. So we've really, Dick Smith and Dawn Fraser. And so that's a real experiment that we're kind of working on that I know Brian's enjoying it as much as I am. So I'm going to continue to do more of that stuff.
This secret thing's happening that we can't talk
yes,
about.
Yes, that's going to happen. So we'll be doing that. And I don't know, I'm sort of, the one thing COVID has done to me anyway is made me think about where I live and what I want to do. I've got a obviously 15-year-old son who's going into year 10, so take that into consideration. But yeah. I'll just change a few things around, to be honest, in 2021 about, you know, the way I just generally go about things and where we live and what we do and how we spend our time.
It's interesting how a lot of it has got a lot of people thinking about what's the important, you know, the big rocks or the small rocks or the sand or the pebbles. Yeah. So what are the big things that you actually want to put in the jar first? If you remember that.
Amount of time we waste on meetings and getting to and from places and all that, I don't want to waste my time doing that stuff anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And yeah, no, it's good, right? And Brian, now, as I said, you've got so many strings to your bow, but in the music, it's cut out. What's the future look like for you?
Well, it's all a little bit up in the air. My calendar looks pretty good, but for instance, I'm supposed to be doing there's a theatre show we do about the Wilburys with I do with four other blokes, Bernard Curry and Nick Barker and etc. And that's supposed to be at the Athenaeum in January, but I can't see that happening.
Yeah,
I just sent a notice that it might be March.
But it could still happen though.
It's
be delayed, yeah.
But it's whether January will happen. So everything's all a bit tentative. And then I've got, we're doing my Countdown play. I can't believe it's not Countdown in August. So that's good. And then I've got Absolutely 80s gigs and I'm doing some stuff with the Androids. But, you know, everything's just a bit tentative at the moment. But, you know, in theory it's looking good, but you just don't know. And, you know, and I think, you know, as for me, I sort of really kind of think I want to move to Queensland because I just think Victoria's getting so overpopulated. The infrastructure can't handle it. And I don't like the weather. And I think it sort of made me realise that, you know, well, hang on, I'm on my last lap here. I may as well enjoy the rest of my life because, you know, it's, you know, probably only got another 10 years. So I'm sort of thinking
that he's got a bright outlook for the future, isn't he?
Oh, hello, Captain Happiness over here.
Well, just about Captain Happiness, I had to ask. You actually, Brian, were part of the 2006 AFL Grand Final pre-match.
I was. I was the only person from Essendon out on the field that day.
That's right, yeah, mate. How was it? Because that would have been like that. I know when I've been to the grand final, a lot of people, you know, of course they want to watch the match, but they also want to watch the entertainment. So they get out there and sit there. So you've probably got at least 80,000, anywhere between 80 to 100,000 at that moment before the game.
Yeah, there was about, I think, 93,000 2006. So you're playing in front of 93,000, which is fantastic. And then you've got probably a couple of million people watching on TV as well.
Yeah.
So it probably doesn't get any better than that. And I was pretty in match fit at the time because we'd just done the Countdown Spectacular concert series around the country.
That's right. They were I have to give you credit. They were fantastic.
Thank you, mate. And what a thrill it was for me to have Darryl Braithwaite, Joe Camilleri, and Shane Howard and Sean Kelly and John Paul Young doing backing vocals on Everybody Wants to Work.
excuse me. I'll just lean over and pick up the half a dozen names you've dropped, mate. it's like a deck of cards. You've just got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, but just in that, like, in a situation like that, is it full of egos or do the people actually work together? You know, or do they say, look, I've got my bit, I'll do my bit, then I walk away and you can do your bit? Or do they actually try and work together?
No, we tried to work together because we'd been working together for, you know, a month or two beforehand doing these series of concerts.
Yeah.
So by the time we got there, we were all old mates and, you know, we were just having a great time together. So it was just a heap of fun and, you know, I'll probably never get another gig as good as that, but at least I got to do it once, so that's fantastic.
Well, just in that, because you talk about the concert you did beforehand, how does that come together? Is it you or somebody else who got the brainwave to say, we've got all these big names we want to put together on the one bill? How hard is that to get together?
Kadinsky works out, he wants to do something, and he rings you up and you go, right, he'd Frontier Touring do all of that stuff. And, you know, logistically, it would be a nightmare. You've got something like 74 musicians travelling around the country and then you've got to get them all into the hotel and get them from... So, you know, they did a...
What's the mini bar cost of that, mate? That's unbelievable.
I don't know. I don't know. But
But hang on. Half of them don't drink anymore, Simon. Most of them are.
You were supposed to.
That's true. They've had a lifetime. Yeah, they've had a lifetime of alcohol and drugs in their first 20 years. I don't need any more. Yeah, that's true.
The ironic part about it was they said there's no alcohol backstage because there's quite a few people on the show that had become alcoholics. But the reason they'd become alcoholics is because Frank Stivala and the people that booked us for all of those years, you go to the gig and here's a slab of beer and a bottle of scotch, boys, have a good gig. Now, what other job do you... Imagine being an accountant, you go to work and say, I'll get the Bronski file out and here's a slab of beer and a bottle of scotch, get those figures done. It just... people who are banning us from alcohol are also the people that kind of created the alcoholics in the first place. So I just put the vodka in.
No, that's a very good point. But it was, the old sex, drugs and rock and roll, now it's become a bit more mellow. In some ways it's become mellow. It's just the rock and roll, and we've sort of left that little bit out a little bit because we've had so many generations of it.
On that particular tour, I had never seen so much drugs backstage in my entire life.
Wow.
There was Viagra everywhere.
Boom, boom. Well, very good, mate. Working well.
Thank you very much. I'm still dirty on you and Justin. Because every time I go to the picture theatre, here's Simon Madden Memorial Theatre, and then next to number two is the Justin Madden Memorial Theatre.
Yeah.
I want number three to be my theatre.
Well, what you're going to do is the Tim Carroll, who actually was at that stage, was the global marketing manager of Village Roadshow.
Right.
Nice title to have. He actually grew up across the road from us. So he actually was a bit young. He was a bit younger. And it's really interesting because he says, I saw these two blokes across the road do really well. And he actually said, look, if they can do well from Airport West, well, maybe I could do well. So he actually did very well. So he sort of had a little bit of appreciation. He said, we'll name this. They refurbished the theatres.
Yeah.
And I said, we'll name this one Simon and this one Justin. And I think we went to the opening of them and they had some terrible teenage movie on that I had to sit through while they said, thanks very much for putting the name on it,
Isn't Memorial Theatre after when you're dead, don't you?
I don't think it's actually called the Memorial one yet. All right.
I was going to say, can we just check you for a pulse, Simon? I just want to make
the rumor of my demise is greatly exaggerated. I can't put that.
I was going to say, one stage we did that to Dougie Hawkins. We told him they were going to name the wing after him on the Witten Oval. This is back in the mid-80s. And he said, that's fantastic. And Shane O'Sullivan said to him, it's the Doug Hawkins Memorial Wing. And so Doug went, that's magnificent. That's terrific. Walked away and was great. And we went to him and said, Doug, Memorial Wing? And he said, yeah, that's what it's going to be called. And said, okay. And Doug went to Shane and said, do I have to die before you'll name it after me, or will you do it before I die?
Yeah, well, that's right, mate. You're careful with those memorials.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Kevin, yes. Brian's talking about some of the stories of behind the scenes in rock and roll. What about radio?
Radio's very boring. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, and Hutchins did a show called Rocksat, which was an international show. This one was an international version. We used to do it on a Wednesday night. You'd come in, sit down, talk to all around Australia. We do on about 60 or 70 stations. We did an international one for Europe with Michael Hutchins and Andrew Farris at 4 o'clock in the morning, Melbourne time, because that was the right time for across Europe. So we're across, I don't know how many stations across Europe, but we're in Germany and you name it, France, Italy, everywhere. We're all worried about what condition Michael would turn up in. Andrew turned up, he was fine, sat down, everything was right. About 2 seconds before we were due to go to air, Michael turns up, falls through the door of the studio, sits in, goes, I'm right to go. So we're all fine, all good. Take the first call to some, I think it was, might have been John from Germany. G'day, John, how you going? Talk to the boys. So he asked Andrew a question about one of the songs they'd written, and then he said to Michael, so Michael, what's it like to be a rock star? And Michael's sort of in the middle of drinking something, which we don't know what it was, and then proceeds to go, it's absolutely effing fantastic to be a rock star. What the F do you think it'll be like there? And I'm looking in the control room and the blokes are like diving for dump buttons and things. And so, yeah, so you can get rock stars on a good night. Yeah. And you can get them on a bad night. But at 4 o'clock in the morning, nothing good's going to happen.
Yeah, they've come from somewhere else. It was someplace else, haven't they? You know,
we had no idea. And so at the end of the show, at the end of the show, he was still buzzing like there was no tomorrow.
They sort of start. I'm sure with you, Brian. Sometimes the night starts about 10 o'clock. That's the early part, and it just keeps going through. I remember bands doing, you know, the second gig at nightclubs, etc. So the band had finished in two, and another one had come up. Not that I was there that late.
No,
maybe. Did you do any of those where like you'd have the second gig, and it like start at midnight or 11 or 1 or 2?
Absolutely. I remember being in Sydney when we were just trying to crack Sydney, and we did three gigs in one night. So we did an early support, then we played second somewhere else, and then we played three. So yeah, you'd often do a double on a Friday or a Saturday night. So you'd start the second gig maybe at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or something. And then after that, you'd try and pull a girl. So that'd keep you up till 5:30 in the morning. And then by the time you got home, got her home, it was like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you just fall asleep and wake up at dusk.
Yeah, there you go. And the life of a rock and roller.
That was pretty much it. And when you get up the next morning, you have a can of Coke and a cigarette. That's the rock star breakfast. Fantastic.
Well, now, mate, I want to talk about your TV too, and your film, because you've had spots in Neighbours, and you've had a spot in the movie Chopper.
Yeah.
Now, just about those, like, but you know, doing the even a little part, but in Neighbours, like that, you know, that great big icon of terrible. Well, I say terrible. I shouldn't say it, icon of not. It's something I don't watch, of course, but it's something people love. That's been around forever. And actually, say I've had my name in that. I've done my work in that. How was that?
Well, I tend to talk more about Chopper than I do about Neighbours. Neighbours, not some of my finest work. They didn't give me the details of the character till about a day before, and I was told I was an Irish jockey, so I sounded like I just got off the boat. And apparently I've been living in the country for 15 years, but it was too late then. But Chopper was great. It's better to have a small part in a good film than a big part in a bad film. And you know, it's such a great film, and I'm just really proud to have a small part in it. And Eric Banner, you know, we kind of knew when we were filming it that this was either going to make him or break him. And great direction by Andrew Dominik, who wrote the script. And so consequently, he'd just say, don't worry about those lines, make some up. And just, so it was a lot of spontaneous stuff in there.
Yeah, right.
But no, absolutely terrific. And I made one with Nicole Kidman too, called The Bit Part. But I didn't actually do a scene with Nicole.
But you had a bit part in The Bit Part.
I did have a bit part in The Bit Part, and I didn't actually meet Nicole, but I'm sure down the line somewhere, Nicole said, oh, have a look at this movie I was in, and Tom Cruise went, that guy is great. Maybe.
Well, I was going to say, if you ever get to say hello to Nicole, you know, say hello from me too. She doesn't know me from a bar shop, but say hello to her as well. That would be lovely.
I'll just say, Simon says hi. She'll go, oh, okay, thanks.
Okay, very good, mate, very good. Well, I think I've covered all the things I wanted to say. Is there now? I give everybody an opportunity here. Is there anything you want to promote? Any charity? Any well-being? I think you've done your books to death, so you better not promote them again.
No more books.
I was going to say Kevin, you actually do a lot with the Witten Foundation. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do a bit of work for Ted Jr. At some of the events that he does, and we promote those. And I'm also a patron of the 20th Man Foundation, Liz Twentyman's Foundation. So I like to see them do well, as they're a really good cause. I've been involved with them from the very start. So it is great work, Liz, with the disadvantage in the western suburbs of Melbourne. So it's really important work that he does. So if anyone can ever help him out with a donation, by all means, please do it, because his heart's in the right place.
And I was going to say to Brian, have you started a foundation, or is some foundation looking after you as an old rock and roller? How does that work?
You probably need a foundation to look after me. No, but I do, when I've, had to raise money for charity or something, I generally go for prostate cancer, because my father died of prostate cancer. And lately I've got a niece who's got a child with Angelman syndrome, and not many people know about Angelman syndrome, but it's an absolutely shocking disease where you...
Is that the one with the skin you can't touch? Is that the one?
No, they probably never be able to communicate, to talk. probably never be able to walk. It's Colin Farrell's a big wheel in it because he's got a child with Angelman syndrome. So it's just terrible disease and really hard on the parents, and they don't get much support from the government. So when I can, I do something for that.
Fantastic, guys.
Yeah.
Good. And I know because I always like the people to have a chance to say that because, you know, we always, there's always a lot of up the front and isn't all, you know, all rock and roll and radio, it's all good. But there's a whole lot of good stuff happens behind the scenes that a lot of people don't see. And I know I know a lot of the footballers that they're doing stuff for charities and people that you don't, you know, and people don't know about it. I know other people are doing. So it's always good to get a plug in for the right charity at the right time. So.
Yeah.
So, look, guys, look, thanks very much for your time. Always good to talk to you. I love being the interviewer rather than the interviewee. It's a really good one. I was going to say, bro, I love those glasses, the yellows. I don't know if you're a shooter or a smoker or whatever.
He's both.
They are very cool, mate. They're very cool glasses. I don't think they look good on my head. But, look, thanks very much for your time, boys. All the best for Christmas. All the best for 2021. And hopefully we'll be able to cross paths in the real world, not the virtual world, in not too distant future.
Yeah, that'd be good. Thanks, Simon.
The great Brian Mannix and the great Kevin Hillier. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Simon. Take care, mate.
You have to come on our show, Simon. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Done. Do that next
time. We'll organise that.
All right. Go Bombers.
Yes.
Hey, the doggies. Go the doggies.
No, don't worry, the doggies. Go Bombers.